chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm excited to have Joe Saxton on the show today. Joe is an author, speaker, podcast host, and leadership coach. She has dedicated her career to growing leadership teams around the world and empowering women to find their purpose in their personal lives and in leadership. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Well, Joe, I am so delighted to have you on the show today. Thank you so much. I know how busy you are, so thank you for making the time to share your wisdom.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
I have to give a shout out because I always want our listeners to understand, Joe, that connections are so important, aren't they? You never know where a connection is going to lead because I recently met you through Rick and Kathy Box and the Unconventional Business Network.
Yeah.
So we have to give a shout out to them for the connection.
There you go.
Well, Joe, I'm excited. This is a leadership podcast. You are an author, speaker, podcast host, leadership coach. You've basically dedicated your career to growing leadership teams around the world and especially empowering women. So I cannot wait for our listeners to learn from you today. But before we dig into that, we have so much to talk about around leadership. I'd love for you to tell our listeners a little bit about your background.
Yeah, thank you. Because in many ways, our origin stories help explain why we make the leadership steps we take. I am Nigerian by heritage. My parents moved to England in the 1960s, emigrated like many Nigerians. And I was born in London. Grew up in London, and then in my 30s, moved to live in the States. So I live in Minneapolis now. They are my family, my anchor, and there have always been women in and around my family who have been exploring what leadership means by desire, by circumstance. You know, sometimes we know we're leaders, sometimes we discover it and uncover it when crisis rises. And even when I look back in the stories of my family, like my grandmother had to be persuaded to retire in her late 90s. She had her own business. She was always trading. At the weekend, she'd go to some of the local markets and she was known. She was known in our community. She kept on going. I think it invigorated her. It was part of her life. It was part of her connecting with people until, my uncle was like, "We now feel bad. Can you just stop? Can we take care of you, please? Can we look after you?" I remember my mom telling me, saying, "Right, we finally got your grandma to stop. She's 97. We think it's time."
How inspiring, though, Joe. I hope I still know my name when I'm 97, you know, much less still leading. So that's wonderful. And I wanted to give you the chance to honor. You have another woman in your life, Aunt May, that you talk a lot about, was an incredible woman as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so grateful for the women in my life. In some ways, they're like a braid. They're like braids whose influence weaves in through the years. So then there's my grandmother, my grandmother's legacy as a leader and a businesswoman. My mom's legacy as an immigrant and being willing to start your life all over and to claw your way through challenging circumstances. And the resilience of building a community in places where you weren't always welcome. I think that has taught me so much in terms of leadership as well. And then there was my Aunt May, who you mentioned, who fostered me for a number of years when I was young, when I was small, when my parents went their separate ways. And she was a woman who, again, uncovered her potential. She couldn't actually functionally read until late on in life, until her 90s, but she loved children. And so she was born at a time in England when World War II hit. She stepped up and supported the war effort. She was what was known as the land girls. They served with the fire service, all kinds of things. But also what she began to do was foster children. She never wanted to marry, but she always had loved children. And so she started with evacuees in the war effort, supporting them for short periods of time while their families were trying to rebuild and to keep kids safe. It was like in the middle of devastation and upheaval, she found her purpose and kept on fostering for decades. And so my brother and I were fostered by her for a few years at the end of her fostering career, as it were. And again, these women, their stories may not be known by many, but they, each of them in different ways, capture something about leadership for me and the untold stories of these women who have worked it out and have left legacies that they didn't even realize they were leaving at the time.
So rich. And I think you said over her lifetime, she fostered over 100 children.
Yeah, incredible.
That is just incredible. And you know what? You are who you are today because of her influence, your mom's influence, your grandmother's influence. So, you know, I don't think we should ever, we may not be leading an organization, but please, you know, if you are a listener right now, wherever you are, where you are right now is where you are to be. And you never know the kind of influence you're going to have on the people in your sphere, right? So I love that story so much. So I know leadership started for you, though, at a very young age. You said you were always put in these leadership positions in your youth group, in sports. But I have to ask you, Joe, did you always feel like a leader?
No. And in fact, I do recall people using the L word and calling me a leader and me pushing it back because I didn't understand that's what was happening. I mean, for as long as I can remember, to be honest, even in elementary school, in the school context, being offered responsibilities, whether you were organizing your classmates, captaining sports teams, and I loved it. But the idea of a leader in my mind was something else. They were confident. In my mind, even as a child and through to my young adulthood, a leader was someone who was confident, who knew exactly what they were doing. I think probably in my mind, I thought it was a guy as well. And I didn't know whether this kind of immigrant kid growing up in London got to be one of those. It wasn't so much whether I thought I had the gifts as such, because I was just getting on with what was asked of me. I definitely didn't feel confident.
So let's talk about that and how you built that. But I really would love for you to dig into this because I know that you speak. I know that you coach a lot of women. What are some of the lies that women tell themselves that really hold them back?
I think it's like a connected thread. It's like almost like a row of pearls, like one to another to another. And I would say things like, I don't know entirely what I'm doing, so I don't belong here. I'm not sure if I'm good enough, so I don't belong here. I'm too much for people, so I don't belong here. And if I don't belong here, then I have nothing to contribute here. I've seen that come up again and again. I feel like I'm fake. I don't think like the people I'm with. Maybe I don't act like the people I'm around. I maybe didn't train or access this role in the same way. So if I don't belong here, then I probably shouldn't be here. And often talking ourselves out of these opportunities and assuming that maybe if you're the only one in the room, that the problem's with you rather than the room.
That brings up all kinds of other things I want to talk about, the power of our words. And I'm not just talking about, you know, the words that we speak to others. I'm saying the words we speak to ourselves. You know, we all know that sometimes the internal voices can be our harshest critic, right? I mean, I do want to talk about that. Before we talk about that, Joe, I want you to tell me about the Red Wonder Woman boots story.
I think, Lisa, that this is the heart of my origin story. Well, when I was about 4 or 5 years old, my Aunt May went to a thrift store and she came home with this pair of red leather boots for me. And I had seen Wonder Woman on TV. She was my hero. In that moment, as soon as I put the boots on, I am Wonder Woman. I wasn't playing Wonder Woman. This was not a costume thing. I was her. Because when I looked at Wonder Woman, she always dealt with the bad guys. No one ever died as well. She didn't kill anybody. She just always dealt with them. And she was always on the side of the good guys. She was just, she was fair, she was kind. And I wanted to see more of that in my life. Because even though I was only little, you know, there were certain things I'd already encountered as a child, which had shown me that the world wasn't a fair place. There was racial abuse, things like that. That even when I was very small, that I'd already experienced and been hurt by. But when I was wearing those boots, I could take on the world. I could do anything. I mean, I would wear them all the time. God bless Auntie May. I would wear them to bed. I would wear them to parties. I barely took them off just to wash the things and to wash my feet. Like, these shoes go with everything, Lisa. These boots go with every color. They go with your sweats. They go with your whole thing.
Dresses, whatever, right?
Everything. Yes, you can wear them to church. Yes, you can wear them for sport. Yes, you can wear them for sleep. They are 24/7 shoes. And then the sad day came when my feet grew. And actually the day I admitted that my feet grew because I was tiptoeing around because it hurt so much. And I realized that I wasn't maybe Wonder Woman anymore and that I was just me. But I think there is something in that moment, even then as a 4 or 5 year old, not that I knew I wanted to be a leader, but I think it showed something of my values and the things that I cared about. I cared about somebody doing something about the things that were wrong in the world. Someone standing up for the people who are more vulnerable in the world. Someone who would be kind, who would be fair, and who would ensure the right things happen. Those things inspired me. The boots inspired me too, clearly. But that there was something I was always drawn to about a woman stepping into the fray on behalf of other people.
Yes, every woman needs a pair of red boots, right? We need to keep getting bigger sizes as we grow, right? But you know, this leads me into this whole conversation around identity. And in your book, The Dream of You, you have a whole chapter around identity.
Yeah.
And, you know, where your identity is found. And you and I have talked about this. You know, we say, you know, as the leader goes, so goes the organization. The leader has to understand who they are before they can lead other people, right? Because it's not going to be authentic if they don't really get to the bottom of that. But one of the things that you talk about in there, and I would love for you just to speak into this a little bit more, is the mirror and the power of the mirror. Here's what you said. We've lived in front of a mirror our whole life, and they have been our harshest critic. It is not possible for a mirror to know, though, your worth. It cannot make any assessment about your beauty, about your potential, or how kind of a person you are. You know, it's very surfacey, right? And I feel like I would love for you to speak into this because I think women, especially young girls, they're looking at that mirror, and that could be a physical mirror on the wall, or it could be, you know, what the media is telling us women need to look like, but it's not truth. I mean, because it's your surface. It's not who you are. So speak into that a little bit, if you would.
Yeah, I do believe that this identity piece is huge. And I think the mirror can sometimes be the most intense part of that identity crisis, because somehow it speaks without saying a word. And so there we are getting ready to go back into the office. There we are getting ready to start that business. There we are about to do something, engage with our lives in some way. And when we stand in front of that mirror, it doesn't celebrate our scars. It can judge them. It doesn't celebrate how far we've come. It can be a snapshot. It doesn't tell us what our values are. It tells us what it expects. And the voices that we've heard, I often ask, and I ask in The Dream of You, who were you before anybody told you who you were supposed to be? And I think sometimes in the mirror tells us who we were supposed to be, whether we want to believe it or not. Tells us what's expected of us, and somehow has a way of therefore causing us to minimize our ideas, minimize our creativity, minimize the things that can't be captured in a snapshot. And because it's such a part of young women's lives all the way through to women in every chapter of their lives, you know, whether it's as a teenage girl stepping out into some area, whether it's a college student, whether it's a wedding day, after the birth of children or after a miscarriage, on the other side of chemo or through the menopause, whatever stage of the life, the mirror seems to have something to say. What it forgets and what it can't do is tell you what it can't say about you and can't say how all of those things, how all of those threads contribute to the contribution you get to make in the world. I just want to encourage us, when we don't recognize ourselves in the mirror anymore, or when we start listening too much, we may need to find our way back to who we actually are, that we are people of value. We are people who have a contribution to make. We are more than our worst day. We are more than our job success and our job loss. We are more than the crisis that surrounds us in society. We are more than a snapshot. And we bring more than a snapshot to the places that we influence.
Joe, that is so beautiful. You know, we've got so much more to talk about. Thank you so much for talking into that subject, because I think it is such an important one, and one that we need to spend a little bit more time on. But we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Joe Saxton.
Are you a rising IT leader? Could you benefit from a network of like-minded peers? Let me introduce you to the St. Louis Technology Leadership Experience. This one-of-a-kind program gathers cohorts of IT professionals for three workshops: peer small group problem solving, one-on-one mentoring by IT executives, and multiple networking events. You'll be prepared for your next steps as an IT leader by gaining core leadership competencies and a strong, powerful network of peers. To apply for our next TechLX cohort, visit tpi.co/TLX.
So, Joe, we still have a lot to talk about, and we're going to try to get it in this last half. But one of the things, and you've written on this because you write for Today's Christian Woman, you know, we talk a lot about the power of the tongue. And in the power of the tongue, there's life and then there's death. But in James, here's what it says. Not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. Anyone who's never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. When we put bits into the mouth of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they're so large and are driven by strong wind, they are steered by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boast. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire. The scripture talks about the power. It's either we can use our words for death or life with people. I'd love for you just to speak into that as a leader, how important it is for us to watch our words.
I mean, I think the reality is that so much happens in communication. Our words are powerful. Whatever our worldview is, we know words are powerful. I'm sure all of us can remember something that somebody said that stuck. You know, whether it was a parent, whether it was a teacher, the things that stick more powerfully are the negative things. They have an erosive way. I grew up with that saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. And I wish that were true. And I remember there were times as a little girl saying that to myself, willing that to be true as a way of trying to brush it off. But the reality is, a stick, at least you can heal. A stone, you can dodge. But words have a way of getting into your head, getting into your mind, and embedding themselves in your heart, to the point that even when you may say they didn't affect you, but if you're still living the reaction to them, then they have affected you. And sometimes words can be a wonderful catalyst. That leader who saw something in you and said, keep going. That leader who encouraged you and said, you know what? What you're doing is a risk, but it's a risk worth taking. I believe in you. Huge impact in your life. There are those of us listening who have careers, who have career success, that they can trace back to that teacher who believed in them, that they can trace back to that thing that that parent said, that can trace back to what a sibling, a friend, a mentor said, because it was so powerful. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could do that for somebody else? And we can all go back to the person who said you'd never amount to anything and the impact that had. So I know that sometimes we've taken negative words and used them for good. What I'm saying, though, is words have power and they can wear you down and wear you out. So let's choose well.
Yeah, absolutely. You wrote a blog for Today's Christian Woman titled The Good Shepherd, based on Psalm 23, you know, that he makes me lie down beside still waters. And you had an incident in your own life where, you know, you were experiencing some things and you realized, hey, I need to start taking care of Joe some. Can you talk about that story and this whole idea of being refreshed?
Yeah, it was about 8 or 9 years ago. And the job I was part of had come to a very painful ending, unexpected ending. It was a church organization, but there were some things happening where a number of us walked away because the job wasn't going to work, including our boss. We all walked away together. We had moved for this job. We had rearranged our lives. We'd enrolled our kids in new schools for this job. And so all that sense of responsibility was rising, 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 and thinking, are we going to move our family again? They're settled. They're in a place that they love, you know, things like that. What does this mean for our future? Things like that. So all of that anxiety is in my mind. And as these things are unfolding, I cannot sleep because I'm thinking, and I'm thinking of my children, and I'm thinking of my disappointments, and I'm thinking of the frustrating conversations and the things that I wish I had said if I'd have remembered them at the time. I was worried. I was angry. I was sad. All of these things, night after night after night, I couldn't sleep. And then I'd wake up, and because I'm wanting to have it all together for these young children, well, elementary kids, who are old enough to ask questions, but not old enough to interpret what's going on, I'm wanting to make sure that there's stability in their world. And we do that, don't we? We carry on because we want to ensure some kind of stability. But the thing is, we were in an unstable situation. And so I internalized it all. So all the instability went inwards because I'm trying externally to gymnastics class, ballet class, sports, community, friends in crisis, just keep saying, elderly family on another side of the world, you don't want to worry anybody. You don't want to freak anybody out. So I'm carrying on. Then I began to have anxiety attacks and panic attacks in the night where I'd wake up clawing my throat, unable to breathe. It was almost like having shocks in my body in the night, my body just waking up in shock. And then I couldn't sleep again. And it would happen 3 or 4 times a night. And so I'd stay up later because I didn't want to sleep. And I'd stay up later because I was trying to avoid, I'd want it to last as short a period as possible. And then after a number of months of this, I started having heart palpitations. And again, doing what many people have done, but not advisable, friends, I ignored them because I just thought, oh, that's weird. And the next day, they were still there and I ignored them even more, partly because by then I was a little bit afraid. And on the third day, I thought, okay, you are having heart palpitations all day. And this has gone on for 3 days. So I called the doctor and said, is this something I need to come in for? And they sent me to an urgent care immediately. And as I walked in, I sat down and they rushed me again into another room. By the time I got there, and when I'm sitting there with all these little things attached to my body and I'm in the gown and I'm hearing all these beeps that I don't understand. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, is this how I want to live? I think I've been foolish. And the doctor comes in and says, well, Mr. Saxton, you're fine, but we need to get to the heart of what's going on here. Your heart is fine, but clearly something is going on. And he asked me a number of questions. And then he paused and said, do you sleep? He said, how do you sleep? And I said, well, I slept well in February. And then the next bit in my mind is still in slow motion where he just looked at me and he put down his pen and he closed all the things he had. And he said, Mrs. Saxton, it's October. Again, in that moment, it was this kind of, I can't avoid admitting to myself that I'm not doing well. I can't avoid admitting to myself that this is an impact on my life, that this coping strategy of making sure everybody else is fine whilst your body is freaking out at night is not a sustainable solution. And he said, I think we've got to the bottom of your palpitations. And this is what we need to attend to. We need to attend to what's behind you not sleeping well. We need to attend all of that piece and then rebuild from there. And I think it was one of these object lessons for me where I said, you know, do I want to live this way? Is this how I want to spend all my days and all my nights? And if not, I need to stage an intervention with my own self here. You know, when people say, how are you doing, Lisa? And you're like, I'm fine, or I'm tired, which is shorthand for, I'm not telling you how I am because it's too long and it's too disastrous right now. And I can't tell you I'm afraid or I'm worried or I'm really sad or I'm panicking and all of these things. We can't tell people those things because we're leaders and we don't want to set anybody off in any weird way because apparently we somehow have internalized the idea that vulnerability is incompetence. And so I realized, actually, you have one body. Your leadership lives in that body. So you've got to take care of that body and take care of all the things that are impacting that body as well.
Yeah, I've got a friend, Jeff Henderson, that wrote the book Four. He said the best gift you can give your team, your family, your community is an energized and healthy you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we cannot ignore these things. And so I love the question, though, that you ask yourself, if your body could talk to you, what would your body say right now? I need more sleep. or I need better nutrition, or I need more exercise. So listen to your body. And I just think that's such a great lesson. So I want to ask you real quickly, what do you think is the greatest leadership lesson that you have learned personally?
I would sum it up by saying you lead from the inside out. And what I mean by that is the power of character and how that impacts our leadership, how that's everything in our leadership, for good or for bad. And in every space, and that's not just because I've served in faith-based organizations, it's in every organization I've ever worked in, whether it's nonprofits or businesses or companies or stores or retail, character matters.
Yeah.
And how we express that character and how we live as leaders with integrated lives really matters. And I think the older I get and the more experience, no matter what country I'm in, no matter where you're from, your character matters because it defines the thing you lead, one way or another.
Yeah. And you're right. It starts on the inside. You know, our behaviors, our actions, our words are going to flow from that center place of character. Well, you know, and this is a little bit different question, but it may tie in, you know, the something extra that every leader needs. What would you say that is?
You know, I was thinking long and hard about that. And as I've been reflecting in recent months, when we have had our limitations imposed on us in many ways, and I've realized as I begin to look to the future, the something extra is something refreshing that inspires creativity. Something creative is the something extra that I keep coming back to. Whether that's a piece of music that you love, like love, and that you can listen to for hours, whether it's a book that you can lose yourself in, whether it's a walk in nature, whatever it is that brings you life and ignites curiosity and creativity in you, I think we all need that something extra as we operate in the world today.
I love that. Well, Joe, what is coming up for you? What are you most excited about right now? And is there a way that our listeners can get involved? Do you have any speaking engagements coming up? Obviously, your book, your newest book is Ready to Rise, Own Your Voice, Gather Your Community, Step Into Your Influence. A fantastic book that I would highly encourage our readers to go and pick up. But what's exciting to you and how can our listeners get involved?
It's funny, my kids, whenever they're nervous and excited, we used to use the word nervous-cited, and I kind of feel nervous-cited because we're in this moment, aren't we, when we're trying to work out how we function as leaders in this day. And so one of the things I'm doing is I'm gathering a number of women leaders together where we're gathering them to kind of just connect, like a small intensive of leaders. Some of them are pastors, some of them are business leaders, entrepreneurs, across the board, and just saying, what causes you to thrive in leadership? What helps you thrive in leadership? And giving them a chance to network and reconnect and in some ways find their way back to who they are in the midst of challenging times. I'm excited about that. I'm excited about coaching leaders because I believe that leadership matters. And there are certain things in this past chapter or so in society which we don't need to make a comeback. Some things we can leave in the past. So what beautiful ideas are coming up in that will birth a new day? So in terms of ways to stay in touch, my website is joesaxton.com, and that shows you where the books are, leadership podcasts, the coaching I do, the intensives I do. That's a great place to start. And I love interacting with leaders on various forms of social media. I have a newsletter just to encourage us. We've been through a lot and we may go through a lot again. But leaders still get to rise and lead. And I'm not saying we jump to our feet. We might do it like real slow, but I want to encourage us with even those small ideas for a new day. They're important in this time.
Beautiful. Well, Joe, listen, this has been such a delight for me. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I absolutely loved our conversation and cannot wait for our listeners to hear all of your words of wisdom.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.